Welcome to the October 2nd, 2024 meeting of the Brevard County Board of Supervisors. We'll first have a pledge of allegiance.
Pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Yes, one change. Item I under consent, I would like to pull up as the last item as action after F.
All right. I move that we adopt the agenda as presented with the consent agenda item I being an action matter to be heard before the consent agenda.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Hodge, second by Mr. Goode. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Passes 3-0.
0-2.
All right, County Administrator's report.
Yeah, there's a few things to report. So Lauren, want to welcome William York. Started in economic development. He is the small business development and tourism specialist. And he's here in the audience right there behind Ms. Schmack. He started September 24th, so happy to have him aboard. And I hope he'll bring some great things into the county.
He's an all right guy.
He's an all right guy. You know a little something about her, right?
And he's okay. Just okay.
So we wanted to bring up the bridge at Pleasant Grove Parks. So one, in January 2024, the bridge was deemed unsafe by Parks and Rec, and myself and Mr. Witten also gave confirmation of that and decided to close the bridge. I know there was concerns from the community, let's try and get the bridge open. So we did, first thing we did, we engaged an engineer to see what we could do to get the bridge back to where it needs to be. When they came back with an estimate, it was like close to $150,000 to like bring the bridge back to some engineer's standard. And again, well, when I say that standard, if you've been to like Pretty Creek, you're talking like almost pedestrian bridges that are made out of like steel frames to go over water access, and it's pretty heavily engineered. So once we figured that's what the cost was going to be, we're like, there's got to be a cheaper alternative. So Mr. Spitzer and his staff, along with Greg Sawyer in Public Utilities, came to the site and figured that they could, because the bridge had shifted a little bit, they figured they could pull the bridge back and do some work to kind of adhere it to the ground and replace all the boards. So again, they did that. They got all the funds to do it. It was a little over $1,000. So again, the pictures before, this was before, to the left, that's when we decided that we closed the bridge. And you can see after the bridge was all shored up on both sides, all reboarded and everything. Okay, so we had a big storm that came up on the Rappahannock River. And as you can see here, this bridge is completely underwater. And so this was October 1st, me and Mr. Spitzer went down there to take a look at it. And this is the bridge this morning. So you can see when we were down there, you could see the Rivanna just flowing up to this. So the bridge looks to be, the structure itself looks to be intact, but we're going to have to go back to the drawing board on this, where it is. It's going to have to probably be something a little more stringent as far as a platform is concerned for what this is on. So we could do
the actual bridge moving all
the water lifted up the bridge and pushed it because there was such a big
huge current pushed it back.
Because you can see here, I mean, it was right on the ground, and you can see, if you look in the right picture, you can see that tree in the background on the top picture.
Yeah.
And you can see it, even in the picture here, it's moved back, and you can see now the front of the bridge is by that tree now. So all the force of the water, the Rivanna, and how high it pushed the whole structure back.
It was open for about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I got to walk across, run across.
And like I said, you know, Mr. Spitzer and his staff did great things, but we were not expecting this flooding. And I can tell you, the flood that on the Rivanna, that's the highest that the river's been since, I think they said 2010 is when I saw it. It crested at about, let's say, 23 and a half feet. So that bridge is closed again and back to the drawing board a little bit.
So it seems like too obvious of a question, so it has to be that it's not this simple, but if it was anchored by 4x4s or something in the ground attached to that, would that have, or would it have just torn the bridge apart?
You know, it's hard to say, because without being there to see like when the big flaw is, I mean, again, if you look at this picture, we went down there and it just looked like kind of flat water, but I don't know what got the bridge to move. And then you can see, even from this picture, you can see the tree in the middle picture to the left. The picture in the middle, there's a tree to the left of the bridge, and you can see where it is on the bridge. You can even see that the bridge moved since then. So we're not sure what we're going to need to do to get the bridge up. I mean, if the bridge was up on concrete and higher, you know, maybe that would do it. But the problem is, to get equipment to the other side is near impossible. Any like big heavy equipment. Again, we use the mini excavator to get this side. It's an easy way to get it to the other side. So we're gonna have to figure something out on this one. So to the public, we're sorry, but this bridge is closed again. So until we can figure out a better solution. So and then some upcoming meetings, October 16th, we have a 6 p.m. regular meeting. Wednesday, November 6th, we have a 5 p.m. regular meeting. And then November 20th at 6 p.m., we have a regular meeting. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? This does bring up, in the grand scheme of things, with everything that so many are experiencing from this storm, this is a pretty minor inconvenience. And our prayers as a county are with the people who are experiencing that. And just, I want to say this before, maybe some people get offline. I heard today that there's a trailer at Tractor Supply for stuff that's being sent down to the Carolinas in that area. And I know Fort Kingdon Baptist is also gearing up and doing a whole route to send down that stuff for materials, whatever they can be sent.
They're also, we got a text from the church today, they're collecting donations at Fort Union Baptist to take down there with them as well.
So Fort Union Baptist, Tractor Supply, and
that was the one I was talking about, Fort Union Baptist.
Okay. So what we'll do, we'll make sure we get, you said, when's it going down, this Friday?
I do not know what's going on. I'll find out more and let you know tomorrow.
Yeah, because if not, we'll definitely try to push
out
more
stuff and get some information out.
But anyway, again, yes, this bridge is minor, but it's what we had to deal with from getting something new installed. So.
All right. Well, we will have our first round of public comments. Anyone wishing to address the board, please come to the podium, state your name and address. Please remember to keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct to the board. Anybody wishing to address the board?
James Kelly, 363 Manor Boulevard in Palmyra, Virginia. Be awkward if I was here and I didn't do a public comment. I think you guys would worry about my health and well-being. This one is brief, just that I apologize for missing a couple of meetings here. I was traveling and sounds like you guys had a robust conversation with our superintendent the last week. It's my understanding that he's furnished you all with some additional information. It's not on your agenda, but to the extent that you have questions for me as a board member, I am at your disposal. I also hear that things are starting to open and folks are starting to move in our newest developments. And so I'll be keeping a watchful eye on the number of students that we ultimately get from those apartments. This is my world, so I don't know exactly how many units are open, how many are moving in, and how many are forthcoming, let alone future builds. But I can tell you that my main consideration wearing my school board hat is just looking at enrollment and trying to figure out where the kids are going to go. I don't know how long we have or what the runtime is until future development happens and other things open, but to the extent that this board is interested in rekindling a conversation around population and what we're likely to receive, I think we're going to get a pretty good idea of that over the next couple months. I am hopeful that that any additional students that we receive might have already started this year through other accommodations, or maybe they're already in Fluvanna. I've heard, and perhaps it's conjecture, that 70% of the folks who are applying for those are coming from outside of the county, and so that makes me believe that we will see real growth in our ADM, our average daily membership, in the near term. And so I'll just keep plugged in and make sure that I am the most informed individual as it relates to our headcount, so that when I see you, you can ask me how we're doing.
But thank you.
Thank you all so much.
Thanks, Dan.
Anyone else wishing to address the board? Seeing none, we will close the first round of public comments. Move on to item number 7, presentations.
We have one appointment
oh,
first.
Oh, you're first.
Yep.
She's here.
Yeah. That's me.
All right, for community planning and management team, CPMT, parent representative.
Supervisors, yeah, so we got one appointment for the CPMT parent representative, Kristen Hoberg. She is here this evening, and so like we do all the time, if you want to allow her an opportunity to speak, again, you just have to go with one appointment for this appointment.
Anything you'd like to say?
Particularly, do I have to?
You do not have to. It's a competition right
now. All right, yeah, I think.
But if you want to, please come to the. See, you didn't know you were going to do that.
Okay, yeah. Hello, I'm Kristen Hoberg. I have applied for the CPMT parent representative position, and I work in the county. I grew up in this county and just want to start giving back to the county. So that's why, and that's all I have to say.
What's your address?
Oh, 942 Fox Hollow Lane.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
She's one of your constituents.
Yeah.
I met her at the last CPMT meeting, and the CPMT unanimously recommended her for this position.
And she's in my vision that I'm voting for.
Sweet, okay.
I move the Board of Supervisors to approve the following board, commission, or committee appointment: Community Planning and Management Team Parent Representative Kristen Hoberg, for a term beginning on 10/2/2024, ending on 6/30/2026.
Motion made by Mr. Hodge, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Passes 4-0.
4-0.
Yes.
Names are always up to you.
Hey, by the way, I've served on CPMT for a number of years too. This is probably the most mind-changing experience I had in community service. So,
okay. Really? Okay. Well, good to know.
Yeah. All right, move on to item B, 2024 Banana County Fair Review, Mr. Spitzer.
Good evening. Good evening. How y'all doing this evening? So I'm here to give a recap of the 2024 County Fair, what the county spent, what the Fair Board spent, what we took in, and all that good stuff. So this year we had 7,887 paying guests. The paying guests were down, I think, about 500 from last year. But we think that's because of the rain on Saturday. So the rodeo was down too. When we get to the rodeo, it was kind of down on Saturday, but we had rain from, I think it was like 2 to 4. It was three to four. So we think that kept some people away. Our numbers on Thursday, as you'll see, are usually higher than they normally are. We had them last year. So the next slide. So the county's expenses were just over $27,000, and that's, we saved, you can see our budget, so we saved in every line. So we were trying to be cautious of that. And we got grant money, too, that we were able to give to the Fair Board some expenses, so they got money back for the, I think it's the VA-250 grant, right? The VA-250 grant that we worked with. They were able to leverage, they were able to get a 50-50. So they were able to get more. We were able to get more by giving them the funds to spend.
Did
Did that play a role in advertising being so low? I mean, so much lower than your budget?
Yes, they did all the advertising. They took care of the fair books. We usually pay for those. And they took care of all the ads and review and all that kind of stuff. So the grant, we give them, you know, half of what they got back. So it was beneficial for them to do that. So that's why we're so much lower in that line. But next year, if we don't get that opportunity, then it'll go back to the way it was the year before, where we'll pay for the fair of the books, they'll pay for the brochures, all that kind of thing. It's like a 50-50 split. Any more questions about our expenses? And the light towers are always going up, by the way. Like, we had 35 light towers this year. So that's an increase of 5 light towers. I think that was an extra $3,000 that we spent on light towers, because we just got to have them to light the park up. So we're trying to have more events near the back, too, so we have to light the pole barn area that we used to not light up. So we're kind of growing. So the county's revenue with the gate sales, the carnival rides were up a little bit, and our fair vendors were about the same, so we were just under $48,000, and that was up from last year. I can say that was last year. But last year was 45, so we're up $2,000, $3,000 from last year. So the next one will be the county fair expenses, and they're at $68,000. So the newest thing that came in was the carver, the stump carver that did faces like the bear face and the stump carver back there. That was our new thing. And they paid for a little bit extra for the parking people to park cars. I think they paid an extra day that they normally didn't. So theirs was just over $68,000, and last year their expenses was 63. So it's gone up. And everything goes up a little bit every year. So plus, they're going to get a lot of that back, remember, because some of that was part of that grant. So their expenses that went up, they should get a lot of that back with the grant, because they took ours and stuff over. And then, so the revenue was 85, almost 86. And last year it was 79. So they actually brought in more revenue, and that was through the monster truck. Our monster truck routes were up a little bit more than normal. But the rodeo tickets were down a little bit.
Certainly a good kudos to the sponsors, though. I mean,
yeah.
It couldn't be done without the sponsors.
We're not there, yeah. We're working. We're there. But yeah, we have a couple of big, really big sponsors that help us out, and that allows us to be able to put this on. So the next one, I think, is a breakdown of the couple of years in the past, just in case you want to know kind of how we've been doing. We've been making money every year from the previous year, so that's a good thing. So we're not going down ever. We're one of the only few county fairs that is growing in the state, actually. Most of the others are either staying or they're going down. So, and we're always trying to bring in something new. So we're looking to bring in, I would like to bring in wrestling next year. They want to come. I think it'd be fun. Outdoor wrestling? Yeah. Wrestling ring? I think it'd bring a lot of people on a Thursday or Friday night. I do.
Friday night SmackDown?
The big company on the East Coast contacted us to come out to the fair this year. So we weren't ready because it was late. So we might look into something like that. I think it's a different crowd. It'll draw a different crowd out there, and I think it'd be fun. Do it down in the rodeo field before the rodeo, or we have the park, we have the stage in the back. So there's all kinds of places to do it. I mean, they'll bring their own stage, but
Tim said Fairchild and O'Brien should be the main event.
I'm gonna start training now.
Start training now. And so the next slide is we have a special events day at the park. That's Friday for area youth and adults with special needs. The carnival opens up the rides for everybody for free. E.W. Thomas buys pizza and Pyramid Excavating and Paving. They open up their food booth, and they're one of our big sponsors. And they fed the kids chicken nuggets, french fries, hamburgers, all that kind of stuff, and free drinks. So everything for these kids for free that day. The Axe Women, they actually put on a show that was sensory sensitive, so no big noises or anything like that for the kids. So they all liked it. So we had a couple, and then the petting zoo was open. So they could go down there, and 4-H was open in the front. So we opened up a lot, almost our whole fair, except for our vendors, for the special needs kids. And they stayed for about 2.5 hours a day. So it's something we do every year. We're happy to have them over there. They enjoy it. So just a special thanks to everybody that did, you know, I try to tell them, Pyramid Paving, you know, we at the at EW, he does a lot for the fair. He's the fair board president, and he's the one that kind of got that spearheaded. So it's a good thing that we do.
You want to just go back one slide? So I noticed that at first I went, okay, well, clearly COVID was going on at 7,800 to 18,000, but then when you look below that, the pre-COVID, we were in the sevens and eights. What is it that changed that jumped us more than double?
So we started doing rodeo. We actually, like the first, that was, I think, the fair board started in 2015, if I'm not mistaken. That was our first fair, technically fair. And that was to get the kids into the state fair. So you have to show in a county fair in your county to be able to show at the state fair. So it was for 4-H. So that shows, we didn't have a lot of events. The first fair we had, I think, was a carnival, vendors, some food trucks, and I'm not even sure we had some entertainment, but that was it. We may have had a petting zoo, but it was under a tent. You know what I'm saying? It's not the big petting zoo we have under the pole barn. So it's very small. And we've been growing. The fair board's done a great job. They've gotten out, they got sponsors and stuff. Now we have a rodeo. So we've had a rodeo for about 5 years, probably 6 years. So you can see the jump where that brings in the revenue because people are coming in. A lot more people are coming in a day. And we can tell with parking. We used to only fill up 3/4 of the parking on the one side. I'm parking at the school. I'm almost having to park at the school. You know what I'm saying? I'm parking on that road, that big stretch along there. We put handicap parking up behind the horse trail area. So we gave them their own actual handy area to park so we could have more parking on the other side. So we've grown a lot. We had 40, 50 cars in our handicap parking area like a night when we were there. So it's being used. So we're growing.
Thank you.
Yeah, but that's probably the big reason for that. Our home arts competition, we always used to struggle to find somebody to run it. I think we finally found somebody, Melinda Brady. She works at the
Commonwealth
Attorney's Office. Yep. So she, her and Susan Eddington, they did a great job. We had a lot of entries. Our new thing was Lego. It was a Lego entry where you could build Legos. So that was the new entry for this year. They're going to try to do that every year. And I know they always do the tasting and that kind of stuff. But we had a lot of entries. So we have filled up 3 sheds. We get 3 sheds donated to us for the event, and we fill up 3 sheds with home arts. So it's something we don't want to lose. And it's something good for a county fair. You know, people bringing their jams and all kinds of stuff like that. So I know the sheriff usually takes tests for most stuff. You did too? Jennifer was the taste tester this year. So we all kind of put in a little bit for the fair. And the next one is just recognitions. That's the fair board. So I think we have a couple people that might want to join the fair board this year, so we're going to bring them into a meeting and talk to them to see if they're going to be a good fit for us, and then we might be able to add a couple of new faces to our fair board next year. Any questions about that? I think questions is next, right? Nope, pictures. So we have the barrel train. That's always free. That's right by the ruins. So that's always nice that they come out for all Saturday and run that course for free. So, and then questions? Any questions?
I would just say thank you. I mean, that's the fair, I guess, of 2015. I was right about when I moved here and started working at Puma. So, I mean, I guess I've kind of had the perspective of seeing that grow ever since I've been here. And it's very much so blown out and something that my family and I look forward to going to every year, especially now that we've got little ones. So thanks to the fair board. Thanks to Parks and Rec. For putting on the event that continues to grow and continues to get better. So.
Yeah, well, I was at the fair board and Parks and Rec puts in a lot of hours and a lot of sweat.
We've already started meeting for next year. So we meet once a month, sometimes twice a month, not usually twice a month until March when it gets a little bit closer, but we meet once a month to try to go over what we're doing and kind of plan for the following year and get thank yous out to our sponsors and letters out, because a lot of people do their sponsorship before by January. So we try to get all that out early.
It shows.
Yep. So we're trying to improve a little bit every year. Yeah. So.
Definitely appreciate it, Aaron. And thank the t-shirts for your staff and helpers makes it real easy. A couple times people were looking for people, and I said, just look for the neon pink, neon yellow, neon green, and it helped them find you guys really.
Yeah, so that we, and then the purple are for our helpers, so they would normally know. It's our volunteers. So that way we try to be a color that you can see. But the pink, we try to be a color that we can be spotted. And not many people are going to wear bright pink. And I'm not. I don't mind wearing bright pink. It doesn't bother me. So. But yeah, I mean, we like to wear. Oh, and I'm parking cars. You know what I'm saying? So if we're parking cars, and you know, we got to go out there, I'm trying to put on the best. So that's why we're a lot of bright colors. We do our best.
And special thanks to Sheriff's Office, too, for directing traffic.
Yeah.
And then for fire and rescue too, being out there just
for the radio.
Emergencies that come up.
And we had a couple emergencies that came up. So. Yeah, it's
thank
a team
you.
Effort. Thank you.
All right, moving on to action matters. Item C, handicap hunt.
Yeah, I'm just gonna say, I was like, this is my day. So every year we have a Wheel and Sportsman hunt at the park. It's to try to curb some of the deer population that run on 53. They hit cars going up and down the road, and it's overpopulated. So we've been doing this, I think, since about 2015, maybe. It's been about that long. And we normally harvest, what, 2 to 5 deer a year. Last year we didn't harvest any, and it happens, you know what I'm saying? So this year we're trying to do the same thing. We like to do it on December 27th. School's out, so that way there's no issues with school. Kids shouldn't be in school, but nothing should be going on in school. So we should be able to have a safe hunt and close the park down for the day. But we have to close the park down and all of our trails down for the day. We try to leave the dog park open because it's far enough away from where we're hunting that they can use the dog park pins, but we try to keep all the trails closed. These are our hunt locations. I may add one this year because school's out. So we may add a location that's at the community garden, which is right there where it says Lippard Lane. So we have a bunch of deer that come out right there at that corner, and it's been at the school, so we've been nervous to put somebody there. But being 2 days after Christmas, nobody's gonna be at school. So we might try to hunt that area too this year. Any questions?
I'll just say I had a constituent call about concerns about it, and she was concerned about hunting and killing deer in general. And she said, don't we have another, and I'm saying this for whatever other constituents are listening. She said, we already have a hunting season. Why do we need this to kill deer? And I explained that somebody in a wheelchair, for example, can't make their way back through the woods by themselves the way that somebody else could, and that the discussion of hunting in general, the liking of hunting deer in general is much bigger than us here in Fulham County. And then she called back and said, well, wait a minute, but what about if somebody was to shoot a deer, don't they have to track it down? I said, yes, by law you have to. And she said, well, how are they going to do that in a wheelchair? I said, that's exactly the point, is that they had these helpers who were out there to help them get and retrieve that deer.
They sit in the blinds with them.
Right.
They're helping.
Somebody in a wheelchair is not going to, once they do get to it, get the deer up, hang it, and trim it, and so on. So
I do that.
Yeah.
I go in the woods. Me and my staff, along with the helpers, we'll go find them.
Yeah.
And then we field dress them at one location that we try to keep out of the public's eye. And then we give them to them on their truck, and they take them, and they tag them and take them.
And I think she did understand in the end that
but
this
can't
happen for those people without this type of function.
There's no hunting allowed in the park,
yeah,
legally. So there's so many deer that stay in our park and travel back and forth because they know you can't be touched in our park.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I mean, that's, and we don't even hunt the busiest part of the park, which I think is the Sheriff's Office of the Dog Park. I think that has the most deer in it, personally. Like, we don't even hunt that part. We hunt the part at the main part of the park.
Yep.
So.
So, yeah, out of order, 2024, Great Purge.
I'm sorry?
2024, Great Purge.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I'm not going to tell you that somebody shot one of the guts, and I haven't had to shoot one personally to make sure that it's not out there in the soccer fields or on their playground. So, but that's my job. You know what I'm saying? Is to help them be successful with what they're doing. So,
there's two or three deer that are killed.
We normally two to five. Most of them are back at the stage area. They like to come behind the stage, so like at least the person that sits there usually gets two shots. So you can kill two deer, so they get two deer there. One behind the school usually gets shot, and then occasionally one around the soccer fields. But we have a couple guys with track chairs, so I've been trying to put them in hole 18, 17 on the disc golf course to actually get them back into the woods a little bit to be able to get the deer before they can spread out and come. And then we put a person at the maintenance shed. We've been finding more deer from out there. So we're trying to spread them to where I've been seeing deer come. But we have a couple guys that have track chairs with the, so they can actually go, and I've learned how to drive a vehicle with the thing on the gas and the brake. So I'm able to back their car. One guy let me do it, so I'm able to back their cars up for them. So we're able to help them get as close as possible to be as successful as they can for this. And like it says, it helps the cars from hitting them going down 53.
Yeah.
Because they're going to be running, and they're running soon. So just be careful when you drive. Oh, my son just started driving, and we had a big conversation. Go through it. Don't worry.
I move that the Board of Supervisors also authorize the sheriff to conduct a deer hunt in Pleasant Grove on December 27, 2024 for the purpose of controlling deer numbers. Such hunt to be managed by Whelan Sportsman, a nonprofit organization providing outdoor recreation opportunities for handicapped hunters.
Second. Motion made by Mr. Goode, second by Mr. Hodge. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Passes 4-0-1.
Thank you. Have a good night.
All right, we'll move on to item D, authorization to advertise ENS ordinance. Mr. Whitten.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. So this will be a proposed amendment to the county code to repeal Chapter 6, which is the erosion and sediment control chapter, in its entirety, and reenact it to conform the county code with the current Virginia erosion and sediment control statutes and regulations. So the chapter hasn't been updated since 2015, other than the fee update we had earlier this year. And so the state code changes, the administrative regulation changes went into effect in June. We went into effect July 1st, 2024, but they were first set in June of 23 is when they came up and adopted the different erosion stormwater management regulations and the erosion sediment control regulations. And so this regulations were looked over by Andy and the building official, and by also Roger White looked at it as well. And so the state code was also amended July 1st to basically enact these new stormwater management and erosion and sediment control requirements. So the model ordinance was sent by DEQ. They developed it. And so basically we are able to enact the model ordinance, or we can make it more restrictive if we want to. So there's a couple areas where we added a little bit language where it's a little more strict, where basically we'll report that to DEQ. And those were areas that Roger and Andy recommended. So the public hearing will be November 20th, but I'd be happy to answer any questions about the draft ordinance.
Other questions?
I move the Board of Supervisors to advertise a public hearing on November 20th, 2024 to repeal the Act of Chapter 6, erosion and sedimentation control.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mr. Goode. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Passes 4-0-1.
Shot. All right. Yeah, almost third time.
It's ADHD. I get confused. All right. Item E. Authorization to advertise a public hearing for a lease agreement with Levanta Christian Services Society. The lease property at Carysbrook Complex. Mr. Whitten.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. So basically, since 2018, Levanta Christian Society has leased property at Carysbrook Complex.
Basically, we've been leasing three storage buildings, which are behind the gym, and they're actually owned by Levana Christian Society. And so the buildings have been the location for the food pantry, but now MACA has moved some of their refrigerators into the gym.
It's underneath,
the gym.
In the back space.
Yeah, Parks and Rec helped move some of their fridges into there. But under the new lease, MACA still wants to use one building for a freezer, for overflow freezer items, even though the food pantry is moved otherwise. But Levana Christian Society would also like to use the other buildings to store donations for their Happy Face Christmas toy and clothes distribution program. So the lease term would be 5 years with an automatic 5-year renewal term. And if at any point the lease is terminated, the county would have to pay the depreciated value of the structure since they're actually owned by Levana Christian Society. But as long as, you know, we really don't have a need for that part of the property, so 10-year term should be fine. The rent's $180 per year. So the public hearing will be November 20th, and if approved, the lease would be effective December 1st. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Did I look at the diagram correct and see that the one shed that's behind the maintenance building would move over and become part of that?
I don't believe they're moving any sheds.
They should be moving any sheds. The sheds that are there should be all that they're utilizing.
Either way, I still think it's a good thing.
Any other thoughts or questions?
Is it in a document?
It's at the end of the lease, but I don't. Where it says relocate, I think that was for relocated in the past.
That was probably relocated way back when it originally.
It was probably in 2018 that it was relocated. Okay. Yeah. I don't think we changed that app to take out the relocated. No. That's probably the reason.
I move that the Board of Supervisors advertise a public hearing to be held on November 20th, 2024 for the lease of property to the Levana Christian Service Society.
Second. Motion made by Mr. Goode, second by Mr. Hodge. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Passes 4-0-1. Moving on to item F, Board of Supervisors retreat and work plan. Mr. Dalton.
Yep. So I think one thing I'm going to pull up first, I'm going to pull up the narrative documents. Just to kind of go over it, let me see here. My track changes, I'm not sure.
You need all under review.
Okay. So again, you know, in your package were the notes, basically a play-by-player, you could almost call them the minutes from the Board of Supervisors retreat. And again, Mr. Payne, Kimball Payne, took meticulous notes and everything. From that, then he created these, these draft work plans. And so, one thing I kind of wanted to go through a few things here, just high level, just some specifically from some dates that changed, just to make the board aware. So this document and everything in this document, besides what's in red line, was what was discussed at the Board of Supervisors retreat. And we put in some preliminary dates in there after having a chance to talk with staff a little bit more about, you know, making sure that those dates are realistic. So those are just some of the things I wanted to discuss with the board. One, under developed sewer infrastructure design, Crossroads and Fork Union, there was something about a preliminary engineering report is being developed for Zion's Crossroads and will be completed by, it was originally May 1, 2025. We're requesting July 1, 2025. A few of these are trying to put a couple extra months cushion in there, just due to the fact that one, our engineers on a later one have requested a little pushback just due to some testing and stuff, and some things that they have to do. So there's a couple of these dates that we push back just by a couple months, just to give us a little cushion on some of those. So requesting that date move from May 1, 2025 to July 1, 2025. Also, there was developed water and sewer infrastructure at Pleasant Grove Park to be completed. It was originally by March 1, 2025. We're requesting July 1, 2025. And actually, we're going to be bringing back a revised PER request on this one. I think we should hopefully have it at the next board meeting. So knowing that and knowing some delays with that, we're requesting that one be pushed back. Also provide for public water and for PDM, the PDR to be completed by October 31, 2024. Again, our engineers have requested a little delay in that due to some additional testing that they have to do for the water in those areas. And so there'll actually be an item on your next agenda, which is going to provide some information for the PDR. So we're requesting that one to be moved from October 31, 2024 to December 31, 2024. There were some items regarding CIP and budget tools that I know the board talked about. So after speaking with finance a little bit on being able to do these, they're requesting a one-year push on these, and some of the reason being is, one, so currently what we currently have as far as the capital improvement plan, we have basically the current budget year plus four projection years. And so what the board asked for was five projection years. So while we were doing the retreat, basically the CIP process has already been started. So everyone had already submitted their current year plus 4 years. So to get everyone to submit another year, we basically have to start the whole process over, and it would really put a lot of delay on things. So we're requesting a one year kind of push on that to implement the fifth year, the fifth projection year for that. And that kind of goes back to develop a budget projection tool too, with at least 5 years with a goal for 10. Again, currently we have a 1 year adopted plus four projections. And so again, finance has, they've got a lot of their documents already in place right now for the 4 years and for what's already set to go out. So just with kind of getting audit done and kind of where they are in the process, they were requesting a 1 year push on that for the fifth year, for the fifth projection year as well. Any questions on those or any pushback or comments? One, under economic development, we just added, in addition to the economic development strategic plan, we also added the tourism strategic plan as well to present that information. Under public safety was regarding present incentives plan to promote greater volunteer participation developed by the Fire and Rescue Association by November 30th. We just don't feel that we're going to be able to get everyone on the same page by November 30th, because November 30th is not too far away. They're having discussions about it, so speaking with Mr. True and just trying to figure out what was realistic, we were requesting to push that date back to March 30th, 2025. And so, we're hoping that's still within the budget process, so if there's any changes to dollars, we can still address some of that in this upcoming budget process as well. And so those are the only items that we changed the dates on. Everything else was what was discussed as part of the Board of Supervisors retreat. So I'll just kind of show you too. So what we're going to do, so what we did, we've basically taken that narrative document and we've put it into more of an Excel document as well that we're going to track. And so this document right here, with the way it looks, and I'll show you what the actual document is. This is the document right here. So this document will be just kind of like the previous one was. That'll be in the Board of Supervisors package all the time, just so you can see there's progress notes, shows what the due dates are and things like that for what we're established.
Eric, can I make a recommendation on that?
Yes.
The progress notes, I'm assuming those will be updated, not live obviously, but like if there's progress notes added, let's say between this week and
the next meeting or something like that.
They will be shown.
Correct.
Can you, from week to week, when there's new things added, can that perhaps be in red?
Yeah, we can do
so
that.
So that we can know what was accomplished between the last time we had a packet and this time.
Yeah, we can add some color differential or something like that to show that there's been a change or something.
Just because when you're reading through, I mean, you see something that jumps out at you, and you know, hey, this is a recent update.
Yeah, we can certainly do that. But anyway, so this is going to be kind of the, that's going to be the document that's going to be in the board's package. So again, I'm just going to go through these really quick. Again, we talked about developing a PER for Zion's Crossroads, and then talked about re-engaging with FUMA about a partnership for the county and their wastewater treatment plant. That was under develop sewer infrastructure at Zion's Crossroads in Fort Union. Under two was develop water sewer infrastructure in Pleasant Grove. You know, there's a PER that talks about include funding for the master plan development in the fiscal year 26 budget. So we're doing that right now. CIPs were due, you know, about a month ago. So we've added some additional CIPs as well into the CIP process from some of the, even though the board hasn't adopted this yet, we're assuming that the board, we're hoping that the board is going to adopt this evening. Under three, provide for public water in Fort Union. Again, PER to be completed by December 31. Develop an implementation plan by July 1, 2025. That's what recommendations come out of the PER and then what that plan looks like. And then include the project or project components in the fiscal year 26 budget, which we've done that. Next page, again, extension of water service west on Route 250 from Zion's Crossroads. Go or no-go decision by December 31, 2024. Again, that has to do with about the mile waterline extension going west on 250. And again, we're expecting probably within the next month or two to get an update from our funding application for BDH, and then the board will make a decision if they want to continue or not. Construct a new admin and social services building and some renovations. Mr. Witt is finalizing the RFP for design and construction. Again, that's issue an RFP by October 1, so we're one day behind on that right now.
Yeah, we're planning to post it on Monday.
Yeah.
Tori's on vacation right now, and I was in court yesterday. So we're
finishing some of the final touches on that and looking that over. Select an architect by December 31, 2024. Include the project in the FY26 CIP. This is actually completed because the board approved the CIP for it back in 2020, I believe. Again, it's not funded with fund balance. The board would actually have to take up debt service to do that. But the budget, the budget's there, but there's multiple approvals that go into that. Even though the budget's there, if you don't have the debt funds, you can't do the project. So anytime you do debt funded projects, the budget authority is there, but you still have to go through multiple approval processes to pay up debt funds. And so those are a lot of these items were related to the new county admin social services building. Under government performance, again, prepare an enhanced capital improvements plan for the current fiscal year plus five. We kind of talked about those and kind of extending some of those due dates. Develop a budget projection tool looking at 5 years out with a goal on a 10-year projection. And then number three is develop and or procure an asset management plan for maintenance and replacement of capital assets for the fiscal year 2028 budget and CIP. Under citizen engagement, complete implementation of the citizens self-service portal. That was talked about being completed by December 31, 2025. Upgrade the county website to include important information and access documents. We're actually trying to get some quotes right now as we speak to get that process going because the website is woefully need of an overhaul and a refresh. Develop a communication plan for citizen engagement. One, identify audiences, platforms, information priorities, and communication mechanisms. And then immediate action to conduct citizen outreach in May and November. So what we had talked about is maybe providing some one-page, you know, things that we can put in the tax bills that go out to all residents in May, when the bills go out in May and November. So just like a quick one-page thing. Maybe in May it's more budget-related. Maybe in November it's, hey, these are some of the things that we've accomplished this year type of thing. Under D, economic development, provide an annual report on implementation of the economic development strategic plan, and we need to add tourism strategic plan to that one as well. they're separated by two. Number one's economic development plan, number two's tourism strategic plan. Under E, rural preservation, provide a report on the number of approved cluster subdivisions, including the number of undeveloped lots and status of proposed cluster subdivisions, identify options. So at the last meeting, we talked about rural cluster subdivisions. The board made a recommendation for the Planning Commission to look at that. So we're kind of moving in that process already to kind of meet that by November 1, 2024. And then under number two, provide a report on undeveloped parcels in the county in size categories such as greater than 1,000 acres, 500 to 1,000, 200 to 500, et cetera. So we'll work with the planning department to get a report for the board so you can see maybe color-coded by the different parcel sizes of what's left in the county of undeveloped parcels. Under F, growth management, it's revise and update the comprehensive plan and provide a plan for the process of updating the plan by January 1, 2025. Actually, at the next board of next planning commission meeting, I think, is it Kelly? Is it Mr. Fortune going to be discussing?
I believe so, yes.
I believe he's going to be discussing that. But anyway, we'll have a plan and a process to come back to the board as well after the planning commission looks at
and
that.
And rural clusters are on October 8th agenda, too, for advertising.
Yep. So we're moving, so the planning commission's taking a look at that. Under G, community development and enrichment, you know, we had talked about some streetscape projects. Complete phase one of the Palmyra streetscape improvements by December 31 and include future phases in the FY26 CIP. Again, the phase one is in the hands of VDOT right now, and we've already been proactive and we've included future phases in the CIP that's going before the Planning Commission. Provide a preliminary plan to complete 4th Union streetscape improvements by December 31, 2024. We've also included future phases of the 4th Union streetscape improvements in this year's CIP as well. Under number three, explore planning grant opportunities for the development of a Columbia area plan by December 31, 2025, and then incorporate the use of the $500,000 proffer funds from Dominion Energy as funding sources as part of the fiscal year 26 budget. Under H, public safety is, again, as we discussed, present incentives plan to promote greater volunteer participation developed by the FRA by March 31, 2025. And then number two was include funding for a county fire chief in the FY26 budget. So those were all of the kind of that's the items that the board came up with as part of the retreat and the work plan. And those are the things that staff will be working towards to bring to completion and bring up those to the board. So what we would ask is the board to approve the work plan, but happy to discuss if there's any changes or anything else that the board wants to see.
Eric, we had discussed some things via email with Firefly, things like that. I don't know that we want to get into practice. I think we could all probably come up with something. We maybe want to add to this. This was something that came out of the retreat. So I would just be remiss if I didn't bring up that, you know, the issue of Firefly and 4th Union, if that could somehow be on, I don't want to say added, but I guess I am asking maybe to consider adding that to an addendum somewhere to say, looking at completing that and extending that out. I realize that's not necessarily 100%, you know, we would have to have some public-private partnership there to accomplish that. You know, we talked with, I asked Mr. Ford to consider that when we started to work on the comp plan, but that was just one little thing that I think has surfaced since the retreat that I probably would have brought up at the retreat had I realized it was as big of an issue as it, not as big of an issue, but.
You know, a little, just, and I'm not against it, the little thing I'm a little hesitant to put on there, like, it's really out of the county's hands unless the county says, you know, we really want to put a lot of money into doing this. I mean, we've got regional partnership grants that are outstanding, but it's really in the hands of Dominion Energy right now for Dominion Energy to complete all of the wires on their lines, all the fiber on the lines, and then it's really up to Firefly. And so CVAC will be coming, CVAC and Firefly will be coming at your next meeting to provide a presentation on kind of just updates. So I mean, like I said, we can put it on there, but I'm not sure that we've got a whole lot of leverage to really push it forward unless, you know, unless.
It sounds like your concern is there's not a huge action item as far as Fluvanna County.
There's not a staff action item necessarily. The actions have already been taken. You know, we've come together with these partnership grants to move the process forward. So now it's just really in the hands of Dominion to get the fiber on their poles, and really what they're waiting on is, you know, I think if I remember correctly, Dominion Energy had to go through the SEC and things like that to be able to do that. So I know there's been a lot of upgrades on the Dominion poles, but without talking too much, I think Firefly could probably give you a better estimate of what's happening at the next meeting. They can probably give you more information. If we want to put it in there, we can. I just don't think there's much that staff can is an action from the staff standpoint.
Yeah, and I probably would rather hear from Firefly before we were even to put something in there. So I'm comfortable with that.
Okay. Is anything else from any other board members or anything you want to mention?
I move the Board of Supervisors to approve the 2024 Board of Supervisors work plan as presented and modified. Second.
Motion made by Mr. Hodge, seconded by Mr. Goode. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, passes 4-0-1. And which item did you want to move up?
Yeah, item I, the FY25 Fluvanna County Public Schools Supplemental Appropriation. I'll move that up to that up. And I got a little presentation to tell you why we need to do that.
Okay.
Okay, so a little bit with this one. So Mr. Witt brought this to our attention. So normally when we've done Fluvanna County Public School Supplemental Appropriations, they're generally carryovers of state and federal funds that they received in one fiscal year. Because they weren't utilized, they're basically automatically carried over to the next fiscal year. Mr. Witten noticed that, you know, we should probably be doing a public hearing on those, because really technically from a budgetary standpoint, it's a change to the overall budget. So because of that, so for instance, the FY25 adopted budget was $107 million. So, you know, if we had a little over $1 million as one item coming forward, if it was below that $1 million, you know, roughly $1 million, call it $1.7 million or something like that, or not $1.7 million, a little under $1 million, we wouldn't have to do a public hearing. But because it's over that 1% mark, per Code of Virginia 15.2-2507, you know, any additional appropriation which increases the total budget by more than 1% of the total expenditure budget for that fiscal year requires a public hearing. So because, again, really from a technical standpoint, this is a total expenditure increase in the overall budget of the county, it would probably just be safe practice to go ahead and do these public hearings for these every year moving forward. So what we have to do at this point is we have to do a notice of a public hearing. So we have to advertise something in the paper, basically saying the budget's this, because this supplemental is more than 1%, we have to do a public hearing for that. So what we'll have to do, what the action before the board is today, is authorization to advertise for a public hearing. The unfortunate piece is with the timing of things, we won't technically be able to do this public hearing until the second meeting of November, just due to timing of the Fluvanna review. And so it would go before the board in November 2nd for a public hearing.
So just so I'm understanding, even though the revenue is coming from sources that are not Fluvanna County,
yep.
Because... Okay.
Yeah, and in the past, we haven't treated them that way, but speaking with Mr. Witten and kind of thinking about, you know, looking at the true intent of the code, again, they're carryovers, but it does increase the current year's overall total budget, so to speak. So that's where we're recommending to do it like this.
That's your question? Motion?
So we would have to, you got a motion.
Yeah, we have a motion right there.
I move the Board of Supervisors on our staff to advertise for a public hearing on FY25 budget amendment of $3,211,343.17 public schools carry over from state and federal funds, which will probably carry the other on November 20th, 2024.
Mr. Chair.
What year, child, right on the elephant?
I was going to let you establish your presence. I'll second.
First made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Little. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. Yeah, Mike saved me. All right, no public hearing. Anybody have items?
I just had one item I had a question about. It was item K, multiple life supplemental appropriation. That was the funds that were coming back to the rescue. Will that be split between the county's two rescue agencies?
Yeah, Mr. True Club, yeah. And if I remember correctly, it's based upon this, this note on here, it's based upon calls run.
Yes, so the funding is split between the two agencies. The total calls that were run by both agencies are gathered from the communication center. And then the number of calls are split up and a percentage of that number of calls is determined. And the funding that came back in is dispersed depending specifically on that percentage.
Yeah. And when it comes in, because Lake Monticello Fire and Rescue is a combined 501c3, can we make it clear to them that this should be earmarked for the rescue squad?
It has to be, yeah. I think what we were going to start doing, did we not say we're going to, are we running that through the finance department moving forward, or?
Yeah, so moving forward to make sure we're staying in with state regulations regarding it, it is going to be operated very similar to the other budget line. So the budget line has been added in for my department and for the Lake Monticello department as well. And the receipts will be submitted into the finance department and tracked, and then the funding reimbursed. So it'll be paid out of that specific, the line, but that specific funding line.
Yeah, we want to make sure that the allowable expenditures are hidden and they're going specifically for the purposes that those funds are intended for.
Yeah, I ask because I know they're really, really tight on the budget and the rescue squad.
Yeah,
I appreciate it. Yep.
You know what the split is of the percentage run by you all and Lake Monticello?
So, interestingly enough, this year, comparatively speaking, our department was able to provide about 53% of the call volume in Fulton County, and then the rescue squad was about 47%, if I remember correctly.
And previously, prior to the county having its own department, I want to say it was probably in the range of Lake Monticello was probably
55 to 60%,
and then Fulton Rescue at the time was. I mean, again, we had a contract crew for a while, but going back, that was about the split.
And the addition of the third squad.
And the addition of
the third squad. Yeah. Being full time. Anyway, back then, we were ended up with about a squad and a half, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. So now, instead of one and a half, we've got two and a half. So the squad is going down and should start. Just share numbers. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Maybe short.
I move to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Alright. Motion made by Mr. Hodge, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. Alright. Moving on to unfinished business. I know that's
Well, it wasn't for Dr. Kelly.
It could be new business. I guess depends on what it is.
I just had a question on the funding thing, just for him.
Oh yeah. I guess that could be considered unfinished business. He's got a question on the funding thing for the schools that we just.
Yeah. Oh sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Dr. Kelly.
I am here, and I will do my best to answer them.
Yeah.
I will be honest if I don't know.
That's fair. I appreciate that. I'll preface by saying I don't want to open up a larger discussion here tonight. I have been looking into Dr. Gretz sent us the spreadsheet that we asked for, and I have exchanged some questions and answers with Dr. Gretz as well on that.
And I wanted to gain some clarification. So looks like we've had a few years where there haven't been any categorical transfers whatsoever. The only one this year was for on 8/14/2024 for $112,000, let's call it up $113,000 from the instruction category to attendance, admin, and health. And it said that this had to do with, are you understanding of what, can you explain? I don't want to necessarily read this whole thing.
Okay.
I can if you want me to provide perspective, but what the background of that was.
Yeah, it is so incredibly difficult to find qualified health mental health professionals that are willing to endure, to be honest, the salary of a public school system. So psychologists require a PhD, and when I came on this board, they were paid between $48,000 and $50,000 a year with a PhD. And so it's really hard to attract talent. And we've had vacant positions for psychologists as long as I've been aware of Fleet Manley County Public Schools. And so that doesn't mean that the need for our students is any less. It just means that we gotta find other ways to fill it. And so that instruction line is where we put things like salary and benefits and all of those. And then when we have to go outsource, that's gotta be ran out of a different department. And so what happens is our kids need assessment. Ideally it would happen in our building with a psychologist who's one of us, who's a FLUCO. But ultimately, it'll happen, those assessments will happen virtually or in person with a contractor. And so that money is just about transferring it so that it can go out of the right category.
Okay, so the funding for that position was originally in instruction and then went to attendance, admin, and health, correct?
Yep.
Okay. All right. So I looked through I looked through at some of the other ones. It doesn't look like it looks like they happen typically on Wednesdays. I don't know if that's any. I thought at first that was because of the school board meetings taking place, but then I realized, looking back, that it's not always on the day of. I was kind of assuming that, hey, the school board approves the transfer and then the transfer is made. I noticed the one on 8/14. Y'all did have a school board meeting that night. I was looking, I'm trying to find out where specifically in the consent agenda that is specifically voted on, like where we can go find that says, hey, we're proposing that this is being moved to this, and then my understanding is the school board essentially, like we just did when the consent agenda is approved, is effectively approving that on a vote. Is there a specific vote that's required to move that money from one category to another by the school board itself, or is that something that a staff or administration has discretion?
So I will look for it in the packet and try to find that information for you.
Okay.
I can tell you that when these things happen, I remember on a number of occasions where I got a call or a text for, we need to move things, I wanted you to know. So it is not a specific voted on item, and it's not individually voted on at our board meeting. It may very well be in the consent agenda, and I will take it as a personal action item to go dig back through board docs, because it's hard to find things in there. But no, we do not specifically vote on each one of those as an individual item. I'll note that I did some, this is probably more than you wanted, some rough math on what percentage of this budget these are. And if we take that $100,000 and we assume, I don't know, 50, which is a low estimate of our budget, it's like 0.2% of our overall budget. And so they really are quite, on average, quite small transfers. But I will find that information for you and figure out whether or not those are in those specific packets. I can't off the top of my head remember. But I do remember many conversations across the years with, five here. I remember a handful of conversations both with Pete and then also with Chuck.
Yeah. As chair, did they contact you? Is that what you said?
Spent two out of my 6 years as chair, to the best of my memory, and so I definitely, at least one of those conversations would have happened as I was chair. So again, to the best of my memory.
And I'm just trying to hammer down whether it's like a specific vote of the school board that says, hey, you know, we are authorizing this, or if it is kind of at the discretion and it's like, hey, somebody, you know, can call and say, hey, we're doing this, just wanted to let you know why. I'm kind of trying to hammer down if it's a specific act. I know that it's not a standalone action item, but like if we were to pull something like we did from the consent agenda tonight, that would effectively be, if it became a standalone item that we voted on separately. So I'm trying to figure out whether this is something that can be done with a head nod, or if there is a vote that actually approves the transfer.
I believe that they are in the consent agenda, and I'll hold myself accountable to provide that information to you. That said, I remember a handful of conversations where I picked up the phone and he said, I want you to know this is what we need to do in order to accomplish this. Mm-hmm. And I believe those conversations that you'll see it in the next board packet. So it is yes and in terms of we are informed in advance, and then I believe that they are in the consent agenda as well.
Okay. Just for reference, so maybe save you some time, I did find 112,802.40 transfer in the budget update, but I couldn't find that in the consent agenda. So if you can locate or point me to where I would be able to find that, that'd be great.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't my job to ask questions, but I am curious to what extent there are any of these transfers that this board either would take exception to or feel as though they would have liked to have either rubber stamped or seen in your own consent agenda. You don't have to answer it. This is your meeting, not mine. But I'm happy to have that conversation anytime.
Mr. Kelly, just to clarify, are you asking about this board, if they would want to see it, or just the school board seeing it?
Oh, I did mean this board. Okay. As to whether or not any of these cross some kind of level of oversight or critical threshold.
Based on what I've read, no. I mean, I probably, if there was discussion in a meeting, would want to go have to give a definitive answer to that. But based on what I'm seeing, and no, I don't think, I think this is all fairly straightforward. This has nothing to do with necessarily what's in the far right column. Right now, what I'm trying to do is nail down process more than anything. It's process more than
To, of course, step to the school board, but it seems to me that, if it's not a consent agenda, of course it should be, and I think Dr. Brett's indicated that it was,
yeah, I just have
things
to.
Happen, I get that, that's fine. But the second thing would be maybe that, if there is an amount, say, over 50,000 or 100, whatever is a school board amount that, is talked about in public, it might be better to just stay in a consent agenda.
I'll process trace these. This is not hard work on board docs, and I'll be honest, my memory isn't sufficient to recall each one of these, especially some odd years ago. But I can tell you that five of us vote for and have, in fact, recently extended contracts on our executive, and I trust him to make those decisions. It doesn't mean that it shouldn't be in the public space, but I trust that when Pete tells me he needs to make a transfer, that he needs to make a transfer in order to accomplish the division. I also trust him to wake up way earlier than I want to and decide whether or not the roads are sufficiently clear for buses to travel, and whether or not ACs need to be running in order to call school. So I will say that we provide Dr. Gretz and our staff some deference, and I think that it is earned, and I believe that it is appropriate as well.
Any other questions or thoughts?
Thank you.
I will take this, I will follow up with you. Thank you so much.
We said we did push out the new business. No, it's not finished.
It's not quite finished.
Any other unfinished business? Any new business?
I have one item. So I think it was around November of last year, we got some feedback from a staff survey that was done, and I remember I was in the audience. I think it was the board meeting after the election, so I recall being there, but it wasn't. I think Ms. Booker and Ms. Eager were part of this conversation still. Tim, I think you were there with me. They reported, I think you all reported back on the results of the staff survey. I think, and I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth, but what I recall from the meeting was that there was a discussion going forward of doing this again and having it be an annual thing so that we could have some comparative data to look at. I think because of COVID, they probably, I think when there was a transition, Mr. Nichols, to yourself, something happened and they didn't happen, so we didn't have those annual things to sort of look back on and analyze.
It's been generally, been generally I think it's an every other year. It was every 2 year thing is what it was.
Okay.
Is what he did previously.
Okay.
And then we had COVID, and then there was maybe about 3 or 4 years that we didn't do it, and then we did the one last year.
Okay. Do you think,
sure it's been one in the last how many years?
I'm going to say probably one in the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
since the beginning of
yeah.
2019.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm obviously, I don't know if there'd be any interest of making, sort of establishing some sort of standard on that, or as far as, I mean, if we've only done one in 5 years, it seems to me that maybe it would make sense to do another one. If we'd want to wait in 2 years, I mean, I guess until next year this time, I mean, have a discussion about what that looks like or going forward. This is just a note I had myself because we're kind of approaching that time where it was happening last year. I don't know when it was distributed and how it was distributed or what. But.
Yeah, last year it was distributed, I think it was in November, if I remember correctly. I think.
In years before that, I forget, was it done in the same way or was it?
Exactly the same way.
Okay, so there's never an outside fans that are going to. And did we ever look into what that cost, you know?
I have not looked in to see what it would be to do an outside firm. And I'm not sure that, I mean, we could look. I mean, I think probably the better thing to do is probably honing in on the questions better than maybe utilizing an outside firm to do it. But I'm not against an outside firm. I think it can be accomplished internally.
If we do a survey like that, I know a lot of people are hesitant with the amount of tracking that can go on electronically.
Yeah.
Really, the paper-based ones are probably the best way in a Dropbox that's locked, and people fill it in, hex, color, whatever, fold it and drop it in. Because I know the people that I talked to, several of them were hesitant to complete it because they were afraid that they could be tracked one way or another. The anonymity thing kind of holds back, honestly.
I mean, I can tell you there is, I mean, is there probably a way to track someone? If, again, I'm the one doing the survey, I don't have the time to go out.
Yeah. Well,
and tracking people, I mean, that's probably way above my pay grade anyway.
And clearly there were times in previous years when I would read the combined results, because I think we did this when Mr. Nichols was here. Everyone has a unique way of speaking, so sometimes you read what people wrote, if they were especially verbose, and you'd be like, I know exactly who that is.
Well, yes, I mean, I will say sometimes, maybe depending on where the comments are, you could pinpoint maybe where they're coming from, maybe a department that they're coming from, but I think there's maybe a very, very small occasion where maybe I'm like, oh, that's not like that person, but I'm not like, yeah, I mean, so yes.
I mean, I guess those things would be sort of known anyhow, right? I mean, you're really good conversations about this or that,
and there were times where people made a comment and you could peg it to a department, so I don't know, let's just bring the treasurer's office.
Yeah.
Where then the head of the department starts an internal inquisition amongst the staff. I know one of you had to say this, only one of us would know this.
But you still have that even that was in writing in Dropbox.
Yes. Well.
Yeah, my concern, Mr. Hodgson, the Dropbox, I mean, if we're trying to compile that, that's a lot of data entry to do that. I mean, if we're having to put in, write in, type in all the comments that come in.
You can put a cheat sheet, how to make sure you're not tracked.
I'll tell you right now that when I try to talk to Siri, has a real issue with me in some of the ways I say things. I mean, I did have people, and it's just natural, whether, and I know you get it, whether you have the ability to track that stuff or not, the perception is 90% or however you say it. And I did have people say, I wasn't going to say exactly what I had to say. And again, I don't know how you get past that. Because, however, even if they entered it in a, let's say it was an outside firm that managed it, if it was verbatim, you still have what they.
One option you could take would be to do a survey and then provide a form for people to put in the Dropbox for comments in the app. I mean, that's you're probably not going to get a lot of comments in general. So, maybe like 30 comments, 40 comments last time around.
So, probably about right.
Well, and I think more so than the comments is it would be, and this is not with Urbana County staff survey, but just with anything. I mean, you want common themes from qualitative data. You don't necessarily want to look at each individual comment word for word. You want the examples of comments that, that would apply to that theme here and there. Just to me, it seems like if there is the concerns that, that you mentioned, Tim, and it seems that it might be interesting to see, A, maybe how other localities do it, if they do it, do they do it third party? I'm not comparing a staff survey to a financial audit, but we third party our financial audit, we don't do it ourselves. It seems to me that there'd be, you know, I don't think it would be outrageously expensive to do something like this and have data that is saved and able to be tracked and sort of compared that's done by someone who, this is no knock on anybody in staff who would be distributing this, but this is what they specialize in interpreting these things and having it, you know. I just think it would take out whether or not someone thinks something was, and I'm not saying it did happen or it didn't, but if we're gonna do something, it takes any claims of subjectivity out of it if you were to have a third party do it.
I would like to raise a point. I was gonna mention before you said this, Dr. Kelly has kindly offered his services to ensure that we craft the questions that aren't leading, and it is literally his wheelhouse, his doctorate, his job is in analyzing data and determining, you know, causal effect and various other stuff. So if we have someone in the community that is talented and qualified, we'd be foolish to overlook that generous offer he made to us.
Yeah, so I guess my question to the board is, and so I was planning on doing another one. So my thought was maybe January, but if you want something sooner, we can do that, or if we want a different time, that's fine.
This coming January.
Yeah.
I'd stay away from budget season.
I mean, or I could do it right after budget season sometime in June time.
Right before, right? It would be much good.
Yeah.
After. I mean, it gets pressure off him, gets pressure off you. And I'm an advocate of leveraging the people in the community that can give us the expertise to do what we need to do in a very economical way.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with reaching out to Mr. Kelly if that is his specialty in his wheelhouse.
And if that's so, I would say we should also once we decide, let's say we are going to do a few months out of there. If that was the case, I would say it gives us enough time to look at what the cost is of having an outside firm do it. There can't be any issue getting a couple of bids. And what they bring, not bids, just also what do they bring to the table if we don't have it now.
Dr. Kelly, if you want to send them some information on what you do and how you can do it, and maybe some other firms that specialize in something like that, and is it the same as what he can offer? Is it different? And what are not every company is the same, but just I guess maybe the next one bring back some options that we can take a look at.
Yeah.
At least.
I mean, he literally did it for Fortune 500 companies.
Yeah.
This exact thing. What are the customers think?
Yeah, I agree. We should look at that and look at the company businesses and so on. Yeah. So I'm sure we'll work with you to have something like this. Yeah. You all agree? I guess the charge is to please come back with some options.
I want to give myself a date.
Financial impact.
When would you like to see some options back to the board by?
I don't think we need X, Y, and Z at the next one, but maybe just like, hey, this is what we've looked at, this is what we found, and perhaps you'll need further direction from us on where to go from there, but something to sort of chomp at the next meeting.
Well, the budget season ends if we had something, if they brought us something back in December, if we're thinking about doing it after budget season, that would be plenty of time.
Yeah, because we're going to be busy. He's
so it's not rushed.
Yeah. I would rather do it right than do it rushed and wrong.
I'm just throwing out ideas, trying to avoid our actions. During budget season, we have actions.
Right, and I'm not saying we would make a decision, hey, we're going with this company and doing this. I just think if by within the next 2 weeks or whatever, we could just say, hey, these are some things for you to look at, for you to chomp on and consider. And then by that time, we're already halfway through October, we can come back and have more direction later time.
Can you give me till the end of the month or maybe by the first meeting of November?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
March? Yeah. Cost no more than
$500.
I know where we're going to put
$500. I'm not going to go there.
I tried not to say that, but I was sorry. All right. Anything else?
All right, we'll move on to the second round of public comments. Anybody wishing to address the board, please come to the podium, state your name and address. Remember, the comments should be 5 minutes on topic and direct to the board.
James Kelly, 363 Manor Boulevard in Palmyra, Virginia. Just additional bits of information as it relates to the most latest discussion. I strongly recommend, this is just like broad professional advice as a survey researcher, not apropos or related to current employment. I would strongly recommend that whatever method you've used to collect data in the past, that you continue doing so. That mixed method, you will find remarkable scale usage bias between filling in bubbles versus clicking on links. It matters how it's presented, it's mattered in what order it's presented, it matters if you add or remove a question that may bias later questions. I will note nothing other than a third-party company that you hire will be able to completely anonymize that, like when you send a survey link out, you want to make sure that it's only employees who are doing it. There's going to be some kind of unique tag, and it doesn't matter if it's me or if it's Mr. Dahl or anyone else. Somebody's going to have at some point some list that has a unique identifier, and then before proper data analysis happens, you cut that before anybody ever looks at the results, and you throw it out so that you don't have the linking information, because that's the real fundamental problem, is that people only do this if they believe that it is anonymous and they believe that there's not going to be retribution. Some of the ways that you can get around, it's been a while since I've done employee and fed data back to employers, but one of the ways that I would do that to get away from the being able to identify somebody is to, you could even use AI. You could feed in a couple of quotes and say, give me a summary of this. And so it takes away, you know, if I'm going to say something that I'm going to have 1,000 words more than anybody else on this board, right? You can go back through the record. And so one way to do it is that you could use AI to summarize it. And so then you have your one step further away. So it's a little more ambiguous as to who they are. So there are some just general best practices. My estimate for you in terms of setting up a relationship and then doing a study like this, I'd say you'd be lucky to find somebody to do it for $20,000. I'd say that the like cheapest study I've really ever done, and you know, it was quick turn and a week long, would have been like $25,000, and that was years ago. So like these things are expensive, but they're also really important to know kind of where you stand. And it's also a good way to increase participation if you decide to professionalize the process. Then if you spend the money, then you're able to say, we're serious about it, we've revised our survey because we do care, we want to implement it. And then making sure that you provide reports to staff that have, to either departments or sections that have large enough people to continue to anonymize it. You don't want to collect the data and then sit on it. You want to collect the data, talk about it publicly, talk about it at work in the building, and then talk to your staff about how you take their input seriously and the ways that you're going to hold yourself accountable to change. And I think any institution that ultimately collects data and then does nothing with it does themselves and their staff a disservice. And so those are just some, like, this is just James Kelly, survey researcher.
You know, there's any like industry standards or thoughts on how big an organization would, like, where it becomes viable to do an outside operation? You know, if you have 5 employees in the office, clearly it's different than 150.
Yeah, so I would say that any staff survey isn't actually a survey, but ultimately a failed census, right? Because you're giving it out to everybody. And so there are no like margin of errors actually on those sorts of things. You know, the central limit theorem, which is statistics, would suggest that the standard error surveys become normalized over sample size, doesn't start until 30. So like you can't even really talk about a true sample or sampling error until n equals 30, but you usually wouldn't send something out until you're more of a medium to large size firm. And so I can't imagine anyone with less than 50 professionalizing it, but you might be willing to make the investment if you want to make sure that voices are heard and that people don't fear retribution or being outed.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Anybody else? Seeing no one, we will close the second round of public comment.
Mr. Chair, I move the Manor County Board of Supervisors entering into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-711A5 and Section
second made by Mr. Sheridan, all in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye, passes 5-0.
Mr. Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned. The Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors will convene again in open session. Be resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify to the best of each member's knowledge, one, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Sheridan. Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Mr. Goode?
Aye.
Mr. Hodge?
Aye.
Mr. Sheridan?
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0.
Aye.
And then, Caitlin, would you please offer the clarity that you gave earlier? You can say it better than I can on the motions earlier.
So, the...
Or on the votes.
The motion doesn't need to record people that are not here. So, okay. If you're not here, you don't have to... Safe make a note. There. I've already said they're absent in the minutes.
Yeah.
So you don't have to say it. But if you're doing 401, the one would be an abstention.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So it'd just be 4-0.
4-0 with Mr. Sheridan being absent in practice.
So correct. Caitlin.
I don't think you even need to say. Well, I mean, you can. I'm not gonna say you don't have to say it, but I already recorded who's not here.
Cool. So if Caitlin, someone shows up to the meeting, you say, Mr. Sheridan just appeared.
Just entered the,
5:48. That's fine. When you guys come in, entered meeting at such and such a time at the top. Is that
yeah, correct? Yeah, thank you.
Is that
and when you came to me about it, what was the thing that you first said to me? Do you remember? Chris,
you were doing it right before.
Yeah, thank you.
That's what this
until
is
until Tim
about.
Said something.
I'm
so Tony.
So that's on the record.
So,
hold on. You mean he got rule book?
Mr. O'Brien, when you said it took you 3 times to get it right, is there anything you'd like to say?
Yeah, you got it wrong the other 3 times.
Yeah. He'd probably like to say one. He's probably going to say it after this.
Yeah. All right.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Okay. Motion by Mr. Sheridan. Who's second? Mr. Hodge. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. 5-0. Thank you.